is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. As you might have already heard, about 6,000 drug offenders are being released from federal custody. It's the largest one-time release in U.S. history, and 97 of them will be returned to Massachusetts. And all of this is a result of the U.S. Sentencing Commission's decision last year to cut drug sentences by an average of 2 years, and a concentrated effort along with the Obama administration to reduce the number of incarcerated drug offenders by 50%. But again, this is a federal program. So consider this instead. There are roughly 215,000 inmates in the federal prison system. In state prisons nationwide, there are more than 1.3 million. That's six times the federal number. So what role should the states, including Massachusetts, play when it comes to making meaningful reductions in America's prison population? To help us answer that question, we're joined now by Beth Schwartz-Apfel. She's staff writer for the Marshall Project, a nonpartisan online news organization that covers criminal justice. Beth, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So we've got some numbers from the Department of Corrections here in Massachusetts that said that in 2014, there were roughly 11,100 people in Massachusetts prisons. Is our incarceration rate, I mean, how does that compare to nationwide?
Nationwide, the incarceration rate is 471 per 100,000 Americans. So our rate is a good deal lower than that, less than half. We have 188 per 100,000 people in Massachusetts are in prison.
Okay, lower than the other states nationwide. But nevertheless, there are 11,000 people here. And again, we were looking at this 2014 Department of Corrections report that said that even though the DOC has a goal of reducing the Massachusetts prison population by 5% a year, they still estimate that it's going to go up to 13,000 by 2019, an increase of 16%. So, I mean, what are the types of things that states can do to get the numbers down?
States can do almost anything because states are the reason that the numbers are up. People go to prison as a result of the laws that the legislature passes. So when a legislature passes a law, as the Massachusetts legislature did in 2012, saying that if you have a third, quote unquote, strike, then you're subject to mandatory minimums, that is inevitably going to mean that there's going to be more people in prison. So the state, by the same token, could do the opposite. They could eliminate mandatory minimums. They could eliminate this three strikes law. They could make prison time shorter for various crimes. The legislature could authorize alternatives to incarceration for low-level crimes. Just about anything you could think of could be done at the state level to shrink our prison population.
Well, one of the things that Massachusetts did do is back in 2010, you know, in recognition of the fact that this state, like just about every other state in the 1980s, was sort of swept up in that tough-on-crime period that the nation underwent. In 2010, there was a reform passed that parole or the possibility of parole for a lot of prisoners. Is that an effective means?
Certainly, eligibility for parole is better than not if you're looking to shrink the prison population. Still, once you're eligible for parole, that does not by any stretch mean that you're going to get parole. The parole rate for 2013, which is the last time the Massachusetts Parole Board made numbers available, was 58%. So, and for people, for lifers, which are people serving life sentences for violent crimes, the rate was somewhere in the range of 20%. So just because you're eligible for parole doesn't mean you're going to get it. So even if some small portion of the prison population is now eligible for parole, an even smaller portion of that small population is actually going to go home.
Okay. Well, you mentioned state mandatory minimums a minute ago, and let's talk about that directly because there are, you know, very passionate advocates in Massachusetts who have been pushing for the state to abandon its mandatory minimum sentencing laws altogether, saying that that would, first of all, in their minds, be more just, and second of all, it would make meaningful change in terms of reducing the prison population. I mean, would it?
When Massachusetts passed that law, it really was going against the tide. Nationwide, states are really rethinking these harsh, tough-on-crime laws that they passed in the 80s and 90s. So when Massachusetts passed this law establishing a three-strikes law in 2012, that was really not the direction most states were going in. Reversing mandatory minimums, nationwide, one out of every 10 prisoners is serving a mandatory minimum sentence. And so what happens in those cases is people go before a judge, and whereas normally at sentencing, a judge can take into consideration the totality of the circumstances. Was the crime committed as a result of a drug addiction, for instance, or does the person have a strong safety net at home that could be, hold them accountable if there were some kind of alternative program available? With a mandatory minimum, the judge loses all of that discretion. And so you find judges who, and I've read trial transcripts or sentencing transcripts where judges say, this is absurd. I can't believe that I'm sentencing you to life in prison for this crime, but my hands are tied. I have no choice. And so when you eliminate mandatory minimums, that's not to say people are not going to serve time, and sometimes a really long time, but it is to say that the judge has the option to sentence you to less time and, frankly, to more time if they choose, based on the totality of your circumstances.
So do you think that it would make a meaningful difference in terms of reducing the prison population overall? I mean, because, you know, these are still people who have been found guilty of a crime, and some sort of punishment, you know, whether it's probation or time, is going to be meted out.
Oh, certainly. I think that it's easier for politicians to be tough than it is for judges to be tough. And what I mean by that is when a politician passes a law, you know, they don't actually meet the people who are impacted by that law. Perhaps they meet the victims. I should say that. A lot of times victims have a really powerful voice as well. They should in the legislature. And so the legislators that pass the law have the victims in mind that, you know, suffered as a result of these crimes. But they don't meet the people who, by and large, who are actually going to go to prison as a result of these crimes. So it's very easy to be able to say to your constituents, I passed this tough on crime law. What happens is then the actual effects of the law kick in, and an actual human is standing before an actual judge who has to say, yes, this is your third strike. Yes, you did stick up a convenience store, but wow, sentencing you to life for that feels really wrong, but I have no choice.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because we started this conversation, you know, with the question of, like, what could states do? And in Massachusetts, there's sort of a funny patchwork. The 2012 bill that you referred to, yes, it introduced a three strikes portion, but it did also reduce some mandatory minimums for certain drug distribution crimes. You know, by a year or two here or there. It didn't, as we talked about, eliminate all mandatory minimums, although there is another bill, again on Beacon Hill, proposed legislation that would do that if passed. And who knows, a similar bill has been filed year after year. But Beth, let's sort of return to where we started. We're having this conversation because of the federal prisoner release that just happened at the end of October. And, you know, you put the federal numbers against the state numbers, and when we have six times as many people incarcerated in state prisons, I mean, does it even really matter all that much what happens on the federal level if we have such a patchwork amongst the 50 states and such a huge prison population under state control?
Well, I certainly think it matters on a personal level. You know, those 6,000 people who are going home, it matters to them. And I also think it matters on a symbolic level. You know, the states often watch the feds. The feds often pass laws that offer incentives to the states to follow their lead. And so I think if these 6,000 folks go home and the sky doesn't fall, I think states will feel a lot more comfortable taking the lead from the feds on reducing certain sentences or retroactively applying changes that would allow people serving long sentences to go home early. I think if you want to make a meaningful impact in the actual numbers of people who are incarcerated in this country, that cannot come from the feds. I mean, the feds incarcerate 200,000 people. The states incarcerate over 1 million people. So any real impact in the actual hard numbers of people serving time in this country is going to have to come from the states. And it will be patchwork because that's just how our federalist system works.
Well, and as we see here, the Massachusetts Department of Corrections' own numbers say that the prison population in this state may rise between now and 2019. Well, Beth Schwartz-Apfel, staff writer for the Marshall Project, a nonpartisan group that reports on criminal justice issues in the United States. Always great to talk to you, Beth. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk about end-of-life discussions amongst religious congregations. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.